Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. This is You Talk, episode 32. My name is Patrick. I'm joined by my co-host, Andy. How are we doing tonight, Andy?
Doing well, doing well. How are you, Patrick?
Doing well, thanks. And we have a special show tonight. We're going to recap the North Dakota game from this past Thursday. And then we're going to have a little rivalry week fun with fellow Torn by Sports podcasters and writers, the Sports Bros. They'll be on here in just a little bit. But just wanted to go over the North Dakota game, get your thoughts on it, and then we'll move forward to the fun of rivalry week. So North Dakota came to town on Thursday. Utes came out with a victory, 37-16. Pretty balanced attack by the Utes, 227 yards passing, 272 yards rushing, 499 total yards. Pretty strong, first performance by Troy Taylor and his new offense, Tyler Huntley at QB. What were your thoughts, Andy?
You know, I walked away quite impressed. We didn't open up the playbook much at all. You know, Carrington and who was it? I think Zach Moss both chuckled when asked how much of the playbook was opened. I walked away with it very encouraged for not only next week but the rest of the season. Huntley, after throwing his first interception, really settled in quite nicely. He looked really smooth when he scrambled. His eyes were up, looking downfield, looking to make a play. And that's exactly what the coaches saw in him and why they, chose him over Williams. That aspect right there. So I liked it. I mean, there are a few things such as penalties that were obviously a little discouraging. Quite frustrating, but all of those are fixable problems that, I don't really see them being much of an issue here going into the Holy War.
Yeah, I mean, the Utes controlled the pace of the game. Their time of possession was about 34 minutes to 25 for North Dakota. I expected to see, maybe the passing yards be a little bit more. Just from watching, some practices and hearing the reports out of fall camp. But, I'm not surprised to see a balanced attack for that first game. Get guys' jitters out of the way, protect the ball. I like that the Utes only had one turnover, just that kind of ill-advised pass on, the first series of the game for the Utes, for Tyler Huntley. Offensive line, I was surprised. When they first came out, North Dakota's defensive line was kind of pushing them around, bullying them around. They had some big boys on that line, some tough guys. But once the offensive line for the Utes kind of settled in, holes just started opening up. And, that's where you saw, Moss really get his chunk yards, even Troy McCormick and Huntley as well. But, overall, I was definitely impressed. I know they didn't show a lot of the playbook, really. That's what most teams do the first game if they're playing kind of a warm up game, as you might call it. They're not going to really show their hand. But I was impressed. I think Tyler Huntley really showed off his athleticism a lot. I'd like to see him run a little bit less. Season, guys are going to start taking shots at him. He rushed 18 times for 70 yards. But throughout the season, guys are going to start, laying the wood to him, but I'm glad he's able to showcase his athleticism and show that he can do it both on the ground and through the air.
Yeah, for sure. The coaches mentioned that about what, 5 or 6 of those 18 rushes were scrambles, just him trying to extend plays. And I think as the year goes on, he'll get better.
you know, throwing the ball out of bounds, dumping it off to, you know, the running back or, you know, a short little pass. So I think those will probably be in, you know, the high single digits or low double digits, you know, by the end of the year. I don't anticipate them rushing him 18 every time because he will get hurt.
Yeah.
You mentioned the balance attack, and, you know, we were all kind of anticipating, you know, just coming out guns blazing with the passing attack. And while aspects of it looked good, I like that Troy Taylor didn't just stick to it. You know, it wasn't like we're going to pass and that's all we're going to do this whole game, nothing else. You know,
yeah.
He found what was working and, you know, he just, we're going to beat it like a dead horse and just ride it until it doesn't work anymore. You know, and so it showed that he was adapting as the game went on and just taking what the defense was giving him and just calling the plays off of that. So that was really exciting for me, instead of just, you know, this is our game plan, this is what we're going to do. Whether the other team stops it or not, we're just going to keep doing it, you know. And I like to see that he was open to maybe not doing a 60-40 pass run, you know, brought it down to a 50-50, you know.
Yeah.
One of the bright spots of the rushing attack was obviously Zach Moss. 22 carries for 128 yards, one touchdown. You know, I think Zach, you know, he's definitely improved from last season. He was seeing holes. He was hitting the holes hard and just, you know, running hard. I mean, I know it's North Dakota, but, you know, they still had some good linebackers. They still had some decent guys up front. But the offensive line, once they settled in, they were opening those holes. And, you know, Zach Moss had trouble seeing those holes last season. But this season, it seems like his vision has improved and he's hitting those holes hard.
Excuse me, sorry. Yeah, Zach Moss, you know, really looked good. Pulling up his stats here that you mentioned, you know, 22 carries, 128 yards, one touchdown. You know, he really took charge and took control as the leading rusher, you know, in that backfield. And, you know, I was impressed with, you know, not really shying away from the hits, and he was willing to, you know, be hit. You know, and like I mentioned last week, he reminds me a little bit like Kelvin York. So very exciting stuff from Zach Moss. I think we'll see McCormick a little bit more involved back there as well. And I believe Devontae Henry Cole has a lingering issue, injury that's kind of hampering him a little bit. But, you know, I think Zach is definitely the lead rusher going into BYU. You know, I think he'll be able to do some damage just like LSU was able to do.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned Troy McCormick. I liked how they used Troy McCormick. I thought he had a really good game. Two rushes, 54 yards, had a long one of about 43 yards, caught a couple passes out of the backfield. But I like how they used him. I think that's how he definitely needs to be used, as more of kind of like maybe a, you know, Darren Sproles type back. The small,
nifty
back, definitely got some speed. But I like how they incorporated him in the offense throughout that game as well.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and then
Sproles
moving on to
the exact person that came to mind.
Yeah. And then moving on to the receiving group, obviously, you know, Darren Carrington was a standout, 10 receptions for 127 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, Tyler Huntley's favorite target in that game. And then you had a bunch of guys, you know, you probably had about 10 guys catch at least one pass. But definitely Darren Carrington was a bright spot. I was really impressed with him. Big bodied receiver, can go up and get it. Everything is advertised. Definitely looks good in a uniform. What were your thoughts on Darren Carrington's first game?
I mean, you said it, as advertised. I thought he just made some tremendous grabs.
the 10 catches, either he was getting open on every play or Huntley only wanted to throw to him. So take it how it is. But, he was every ball was almost, was going his direction. So it seems Huntley and Carrington, are, developing some really good chemistry, which is great to see. But, yeah, Carrington made some phenomenal grabs. He was getting open space. He had the touchdown catch, which was great. He's the real deal. He's a tremendous talent, someone we haven't really ever had since, Josh Gordon, but Gordon never really played for us. So, it's nice to actually see one of these type of players on the field.
Yeah, and it's nice to see the youth actually utilizing these guys, utilizing
yep.
their receivers and playing to their strengths, something you haven't seen in years past. And I think Troy Taylor is going to do a really good job of getting all these receivers involved. Darren Carrington is going to start demanding a lot of attention. That's going to lead these other guys like C.O.C. Wilson, Raylan Singleton, Samson Nacua, Damari Simpkins. It's going to lead those guys open to have big games as well. I'm excited for this. I think it's probably the most deep and talented receiving core that the Utes have had in a very long time.
Absolutely. Is it concerning to you that there's such a discrepancy between Carrington and the rest of the receiving core? I mean, the next closest person, like you said, was, a bunch of people caught two balls and Carrington with 10. So is it concerning to you?
Carrington just seemed like he was the one getting open the most. North Dakota didn't have anyone who could really cover him. He was the one getting into the open space, going up for the big catches. Other than that, Raylan Singleton didn't have a good game at all. It was kind of disappointing to see his game. He just couldn't get open. And, I know he took a big hit on that one pass across the
mm-hmm.
middle. A lot of the guys, C.O.C. Wilson was open a couple times. But other than that, I just think Carrington was kind of the go-to guy in that game. Sometimes the quarterback just finds someone that, has the hot hand and keeps feeding them.
For sure. Yeah, I'm indifferent on it. Like you said, I don't know if it's really a concern as much as it is that Carrington just found himself open every possible time down the field, and Huntley was looking his way.
Yeah. I'd probably be more concerned if it was, maybe Damari Simpkins, because maybe, since they have that old connection, maybe you'd go to him a lot. But I think in this offense, I think you're going to see the ball spread around a lot. Carrington, once they get hit Pac-12 play, Carrington's going to be getting matched up against, the top corners of the other teams, and these other guys are going to have the opportunity to step up, and I think they will.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. And, Simpkins had a couple, I don't know if they were necessarily dropped balls or Huntley just kind of overthrew him a little bit. I know there's a touchdown that, just barely out the outstretched hands of Simpkins. Had he caught that, all three of the Hallandale boys would have scored a touchdown as starters for the University of Utah, which would have been really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the announcer of the game would have made a point of that. He made a point of it all night that they all played together in high school. So.
It is pretty interesting. That's awesome for the school and just awesome for these guys repping, the state of Florida.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely what, teammates in high school dream of is, moving on to the next level and all getting, maybe a chance to play together and continue their development together. So I think it's awesome to see all three of them. They're all all three of them are very exciting players, and I think they're going to be big contributors for the Utes, not only this season, but in seasons to come.
Yep, for sure.
Well, moving on to the defense. The defense was, you know, solid as usual for the Utes. Held North Dakota to a total of 242 yards, 187 passing, and then, of course, the stout run defense of the Utes held them to 55 yards rushing. Utes also got one interception by Julian Blackman. But defense, I mean, defensive line was as advertised. They're deep. Strongest position group on the defense for the Utes, as always. Sione Tatioli, I just butchered that. He had 10 total tackles for the Utes, leading the way. Behind him was Cody Barton with 7, then Chase Hansen with 6. What were your thoughts on the defense? Were they, you know, everything that you thought they'd be, or do you see some need for improvement in that group?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, overall, they played a pretty great game. I mean, the first touchdown for North Dakota wasn't scored until garbage time in the fourth quarter. You know, held them to 3 field goals in the first half, which is pretty great. You know, took them a while to cross the 50-yard line, which, you know, I mean, obviously the defense was stout. What was concerning for me, and maybe this is because they were running vanilla defenses, but it was concerning that we didn't really, besides the one interception, we didn't cause, you know, much havoc, if you will. You know, we had one sack in, you know, the fourth quarter, I believe it was, and then the one interception, you know, and so there wasn't, against a team like North Dakota, I was honestly expecting, you know, multiple sacks, you know, maybe another interception. You know, I don't know. It just, that's maybe my expectations were too high. I mean, overall, the defense was really good, but, you know, I expected a little bit more from them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know they didn't rush a lot. They didn't blitz the quarterback a whole lot during that game. I'm not sure why, but maybe they didn't want to show their hand to, you know, kind of, like you said, just playing a vanilla defense. But, I mean, overall, and they were, you know, a lot of guys were rotating in at every position. One person that stood out to me a lot on that defense, I really like the way that Marquise Blair plays. Man, that guy was aggressive. He was tenacious. He was flying around. He was hitting guys. He destroyed an offensive lineman on North Dakota. I really enjoyed watching him play. I think he's going to be a really good player. One of the players that concerned me a lot on the defense was Booby Hobbs. I think he had a horrible game. He got beat a lot. Had trouble tackling out there. So that was one concern for me. Jalen Johnson looked great out there in the limited time that he got. I think he made like 3 or 4 plays in a row on one drive. But I really enjoyed him, seeing him play as a, you know, as a freshman. I think he's going to be a really good player. But who impressed you along that defense? Who kind of, you know, who let you down?
Oh, man. I mean, I would say Blair, like following you, Blair was, he played really good, kind of splitting reps with, Hansen back there in the secondary. And, you know, he blew up that offensive lineman. He was hitting people hard. He wasn't afraid to hit people, which is really good to see. He was kind of the standout defensive relief for me. Somebody that I was disappointed in, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's because I expected more from the defensive line, and they weren't blitzing a whole lot, but just the defensive line didn't seem like they couldn't tackle the quarterback. They'd get the quarterback, and then he'd scramble free. And so that was a little frustrating. So I don't know if it's necessarily a individual that didn't impress me as much as it was a unit. I don't know. Maybe I guess my expectations were too high.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely, you know, the first game, obviously room for improvement. Utes really struggled in the penalty area, racking up a lot of penalty yards. I think they're over 100 yards in penalties. Definitely something that will improve through running some gassers and at practice. but definitely something they can improve upon as you know, the weeks go, because, you know, getting those unnecessary penalties are definitely going to hurt them against the top-tier teams of the Pac-12.
Absolutely, yeah, and those will definitely get fixed. I mean, Huntley got one for his celebration on his first touchdown of the season, which I thought was ridiculous.
And then we had
two back-to-back offensive pass interference penalties. That was ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. There were some really questionable calls that I don't know if we'll necessarily see them again the rest of the year.
Definitely, you know, I don't know if they're on. That was the first game of the season as well, so they're making a lot of mistakes as well. Definitely not very good roughing on their part. That call on Huntley was, you know, unnecessary. He didn't do anything, you know, to showboat or, you know, he's just excited. But that's what happens with the rules now. But obviously, the Utes just need to clean up some of those other penalties that they didn't need to, you know, be making, and everything should be good. Kicking game for the Utes. Obviously, you saw Johnston come on, attempt the first field goal, missed it, and then from there on out, you saw Gay. He was 3 for 3, hit along a 49, 4 for 4 and extra points. I was impressed by him. He's a bigger kicker, kind of looks like a linebacker out there, but, you know, definitely has a good leg and, you know, had a good first game for the youth and won that kicking job, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kicking game is going to be one of those, you know, whoever has the hot hand, or in this case, the hot leg, or foot. I was a few minutes late to the game, and so I didn't see Johnston's missed field goal. But, yeah, I mean, Whittingham, you know, had said a while back that, you know, this first game could still dictate who gets that starting nod, and Johnston missed his. Gay hit his first, so they just started riding Gay out there, and he completed 3 for 3, like you said, along a 49, and he looked good while doing so. He is a big boy. He does not look like a former soccer player.
No.
I don't know what position he played in soccer, but he's a big guy. But hey, as long as he can kick it through the uprights, that's all that matters.
Yep. And then obviously the punting game.
Nothing different there. Wischnowski. Although it is weird to see him with doing the kickoffs.
Yeah. The only thing different was Wischnowski only had one punt instead of, you know, 10 throughout the game. So, but yeah, it was definitely interesting to see him do the, you know, the kickoffs. He has a good leg, though. So definitely found a kicker to do that. But overall, good game for the Utes, good victory. North Dakota is now in the rearview mirror, and we're into rivalry week now against BYU. So exciting week this week. BYU comes to Utes go to Provo, excuse me. On Saturday, September 9th. The game's at 8:15 p.m. on ESPN2. Cougars, did you watch the LSU game at all?
I did. I actually fell asleep because it was quite boring. I mean, it did not keep my attention at all. BYU did not look good. They looked really, really rough out there. And, you know, they always say that you make the most improvement between week one and week two. If that's the improvement, which for BYU's sake, I hope it's not, they're in for a rough season. I think they'll turn it around. Kalani's a good coach. They've got talented individuals on that team. I definitely think they'll turn it around, hopefully not against us this week. But,
LSU took it to them. LSU missing 15 starters. I guess 15 scholarship guys, 13 starters, I believe it was. And LSU looked quite good. They stuck to a couple different plays. And BYU really wasn't able to stop them much via the running game,
and their offense just could not get going. Mangum was overthrowing players, underthrowing. They looked really rough.
Yeah, I mean, they only had, 97 total yards of offense against LSU, so definitely struggling. I think a big reason why I think they're struggling, I watched the game as much as I could handle. I love to preview the Utes' next opponent, but yeah. I think a big reason why they're struggling is because they haven't really found their rushing game yet. Their rushing game is really struggling. They don't have the Jamal Williams back there who can take over a game for them, and I think that's hurting their ability to pass. That's definitely something that they need to fix if they want to win the game, want to win some games against these big teams. And again, their passing game is struggling, I think, because they really don't have that go-to receiver. They have that Bushman at tight end. Jonah Trinneman just kind of fell off the face of the earth. He's supposed to be their go-to guy. But they're struggling on all facets of the game. I don't know if, Ty Detmer's, I think Ty Detmer might be better positioned to be maybe like a QB coach. I just haven't really been too impressed with his offensive play calling this season or even last season. I think Taysom Hill really won them a lot of those games with his abilities that he had. So it's going to be interesting to see how they move forward, especially this week against the Utes. It kind of scares me a little bit because they're kind of that wounded dog. You don't want them to come out and have the Utes kind of overlook them. But I think Kyle Whittingham will have his guys ready. Sitake will have his guys ready. And I think it's going to be one of those close games again, close rivalry games that we always get. But I definitely think the Utes are going to be able to pull out a victory.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you mentioned the wounded dog effect. They were pretty demoralized there in Louisiana against LSU. Obviously, the travel changes and things like that, might have played a factor into it. You don't like to make those type of excuses, but LSU really took it to them with BYU. excuse me. With BYU struggling as much as they did in that game, they go into the rivalry week, they could really have some fire in their eyes, and really want to take it to us. Utah's won the last six games. Utah's going for number seven. We're in BYU. There's been, the coaching changes for BYU from last year, some of the offensive changes for Utah this year. So, there's a lot of things that are playing into it that, are playing to BYU's favor, or to playing that that wounded dog effect, if you will.
Exactly. Well, like I mentioned at the start of the show, we do have some special guests joining us. They're Torn by Sports podcasters and writers. We're joined now by the Sports Bros. They cover BYU. You can follow them at Twitter, at Sports Bros. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Thanks
hey,
for
guys.
Having
doing
us,
good.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we're excited for Rivalry Week this week. Obviously, you know, Utah's 1-0. They beat North Dakota on Thursday. BYU's coming in at 1-1. Tough, you know, they won their first game against Portland State. Tough loss last week. What are you guys' thoughts on BYU's? Why are they struggling so bad offensively this season?
Go ahead, Aaron.
You know, really, I think it's a simple answer. I mean, it never seems as simple as it is, but I think their lack of running ability is just absolutely destroying anything that they're trying to get going. It kills drives when you get 1 yard on first down, 1 yard on second down. You're always behind the sticks. They can't seem to find a running back that's kind of the go-to guy. They just, you know, they're doing this running back by committee thing, and right now, you know, through two games, Squally Canada's got the most carries with 21. But, you know, I think he had 18 or 19 of those in the first game. I mean, against LSU, they couldn't get running the ball at all. And so I think that puts Tanner Mangum in bad positions at 3rd and 8. And because of that, I think Tanner's looked antsy in the pocket, even when he had time. I thought against LSU, I thought the offensive line did a decent job. They gave him time. Tanner just missed reads. He missed throws. He doesn't look comfortable. I don't know if it's comfortable with the offense, comfortable with his players, you know, his receivers or backs. The offense just looks out of sync, just bad.
And, you know, I mean, I think the running game has been bad. It was bad against LSU because LSU, they sold out on the run. I think they kind of, you know, drew up the blueprint for the rest of the season for all of BYU's opponents that if they can just shut down the run entirely and make everything go onto Tanner Mangum's back, then that is a recipe for success because Tanner Mangum has not been accurate. He's made, in my opinion, he's made mostly the right reads, but has been underthrowing receivers left and right, especially downfield. So it's a recipe for disaster on the offensive side of the ball, though I think the defense is playing pretty well.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned Squally Canada is kind of that main back. What about Riley Byrd? I know he's a speedster. He hasn't been really able to get off the bench, if at all, this season. What's going on with him?
You know, there hasn't really
been. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, there hasn't really been a lot of information given about it. The latest we're kind of hearing is that, you know, he just isn't performing like these other guys. But then there's also rumors that he's hurt or that he's suspended. And with BYU not releasing injuries or suspension unless they're season ending, it's really hard for anybody to really get a pulse on why Riley Byrd, who allegedly had a really great camp, you know, after redshirting last year, it's really curious why he's not getting touches. You know, and BYU's banged up at running back now. I mean, you're running back by committee, but Kavika Fanua went out with an injury late in the game. KJ Hall went out with a shoulder injury. I saw them working on him on the sidelines. Based on the fall, it looked like he probably separated his shoulder. That's just from what I saw on replay, and I saw them working on him on the sidelines. I was there in New Orleans. So Riley Byrd, you know, if he's not in trouble or if he's not hurt, I do expect to see him this week just because of necessity, because your running back coach by committee is slowly dwindling in the number of guys that they can put out there.
This is one of the strangest bits of BYU antics that I've seen in a while, that there's no news as to why. And none of our contacts in the program have been able to confirm why Riley Byrd it hasn't even seen the field at all. He hasn't seen a single down yet. So, you know, you get the feeling, it being BYU, that there's some sort of honor code violation or team rule violation that Coach Satake is just keeping close to the vest. But we have no idea why, because he's already redshirted, so it's not like they're doing a strategic redshirt. And so why he isn't playing when everyone else is playing really subpar, especially against LSU and all these injuries, is really a big question mark. But with, like Aaron said, with injuries to both Hall and Fanua, you gotta expect that Riley Burke's going to get some playing time, and definitely BYU fans since game one have been calling for it.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, BYU's always been a big passing team. This season, they've struggled a little bit in the passing game. Obviously, Matt Bushman is kind of the target for that Mangum does like. Who are some, I mean, who's that standout receiver that's just not – they're just not stepping up right now? And obviously, Jonah Trinneman was counted on to be a main guy there. But who are some standout receivers that are just not – they're just not on the same page as Mangum right now?
Talon Shumway. That's the name you got to remember is Talon Shumway. And he had one great catch against Portland State and has had a couple good catches since then. But he's the tall, long, relatively fast, good route-running receiver with sure hands that I think everyone's got to keep a look at. And I'm sure, Kyle Whittingham and his defensive staff have him circled as who to look at. Jonah Trinneman, and Aaron, tell me if you disagree. Jonah Trinneman, I think, has highly, highly disappointed so far. He had a lackluster season last year. They're trying to get the ball in his hands so he can use his speed. Seems like the only thing he's really done pretty well is kickoff returns, and even that hasn't been super great.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Matter of fact, I was being at the game. I kept looking for Trinneman because I thought his kickoff returns were pretty good, considering going up against a good opponent like LSU. They were the best part of BYU's quote offense, if you will. But when the offense was on the field, Jonah Trinneman had his helmet off and was sitting on the bench. He wasn't even standing up, getting ready to go into rotation. So I don't know if he's in the doghouse. I don't know if he's banged up. I don't know what the deal with Jonah Trinneman is, especially given the hype. I agree that Talon Shumway is emerging as kind of their go-to receiver. I thought Micah Simon had a couple really nice plays, you know, one of the three nice plays in that game against LSU where he was able to catch a ball, fight for some extra yards, and get a first down. I expect him to start getting a few more reps, mainly as BYU searches for offense. I mean, right now it's all hands on deck. You don't really have a guy. There's only been one really sure offensive, I don't even know if you want to use the word weapon, and that's Matt Bushman. I mean, he has 7 catches for 99 yards through the 2 games. Other than that, there's really nobody else that sticks out for anything. I mean, BYU's longest play from scrimmage is to Matt Bushman on a 36-yard play. So those are the two guys, and everybody else is just, who's going to step up?
Yeah, I mean, that really surprises me. Uh-huh.
Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
I was just going to say, that really surprises me because when, you know, Trinneman was trying to decide schools, I definitely wanted them to come to the U. Thought he was going to be a outstanding playmaker, and when he went to BYU, I was, you know, kind of, I was upset because I definitely wanted him to come to the U and be a dynamic receiver for him. So definitely surprised by his downfall this past season.
Well, you know, if you watch the BYU Portland State game, the commentators were talking a lot about how Trinneman seemed to come to BYU thinking that his speed would be all that he needed. And BYU sadly hasn't had a really great track record as of late with, coaching up receivers to really get their route running and their hand positioning really, really great. Last year, there was just so many famous tipped balls by receivers being kind of out of position combined with some throws not put on the money. So I think Trinneman kind of came thinking that his speed and his athleticism and kind of his dynamic abilities were going to just take him all the way. And now he's realizing, hey, I got to, you know, catch the ball before I run with it. And, you know, this is D1. We're not in high school anymore. So there's a lot of other really fast guys on the field. So, you know, even when you're watching that LSU game, there were a couple of those kickoff returns where he looked like he had some green in front of him. And just the LSU athleticism and speed closed in so quick and were able to get to him faster than I think he ever really expects him to. So if he's going to make strides to be where both Utah wanted him to be, if he was going to go there, and where certainly BYU coaches and fans want him to be, he's going to have to start doing the basics and getting his hands in the right spot, making the right, you know, routes and reading the defense a lot better, because right now he's really not being utilized very well. He's really only had ever one catch over about 20 yards in his entire career into his second year now. So,
wow. So that's a good segue to my question here, guys. As far as the play calling goes for BYU, do you feel that there's some mishaps in the play calling? Detmer should, you know, utilize certain players, or do you think it's the execution or both?
I think it's both.
We might disagree on this. Yeah, go ahead, Arne.
Yeah, I think we do a little bit. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, let's start with the execution part. There's been at least through 2 games, 4 plays that I could almost run you through the play call where Tanner Mangum missed his read or missed his throw. just completely a guy was open, he missed the throw, or he didn't throw it to him. And that's an execution standpoint. That's not a play call, because the play calls obviously set him up to succeed, but Tanner didn't see the guy. And some of his – and he just seems to be underthrowing everybody. The one interception against LSU, given was great coverage, but they, you know, Bo Tanner did have about half a step. If that ball is thrown in front, he puts BYU receiver in position to make a play. Tanner underthrew him. He's been underthrowing balls on deep balls. The ball that Andy talked about that Talon Shumway made a catch against Portland State, Tanner Mangum puts more air under that. That's a touchdown instead of down at the one-yard line. So things like that are execution things. The running game, it's an execution thing. I mean, even against LSU, and I had a really good vantage point, there were holes that the running backs refused to go to. I don't know if it's they just, you know, were told it's a B-gap play, so you got to hit it instead of bounce it or whatever, or scared that their speed wasn't enough. So I think there's a lot of execution errors. There are play calling wonders, you know. I mean, but it's hard when BYU is constantly behind the chains on, you know, 3rd and 9, 2nd and 10, 2nd and 12 because of a penalty. And so the play calling becomes you have to get some pass plays. So I think it's a little combination, but I lean a little more towards the execution standpoint.
I haven't had any problem with the play calling. Just, you know, BYU fans are fickle, and most college football fans are fickle. And as soon as you have a couple bad games, they want the offensive coordinator's head, even if it is Ty Detmer. But I don't think there's been anything wrong with play calling. And I don't even think really Tanner Mangum has really made that many bad reads. Yeah, there's a couple of open guys that he's missed, but he hasn't been throwing it, you know, into double coverage or into too tight of windows. He's just been missing his throws. And on the running game, it's been mostly the offensive line. The offensive line has actually been pretty good in pass protection, but on run blocking, they've been pretty atrocious in both games, and especially in LSU. Now, granted, LSU had a, you know, all-in against the run mentality, and that was obviously the game plan. But still, there were several plays where the defensive line were just running over BYU's offensive linemen, and that can't happen if you're trying to establish the run. You know, your pro-style offense is predicated on the run, and at least being able to get a few yards, at least trying to keep the defense honest. I have no problem with the play calling. I have no problem with sticking with the run and not just abandoning it after one quarter or in what fans kind of seem to want. I think just execution from the offensive line on the run blocking, the running backs on finding the holes, like Aaron said, and then also the Tanner just needs to get the ball on the money. I don't really think his reads have been that bad. He just needs to put the ball on the money, and BYU at least makes it past the 50-yard line against LSU if those things happen.
Well, obviously, you know, defense, BYU, you know, with Kalani Sitake taking over, their defense is going to be, you know, strong for years to come. I'm impressed, you know, with the Warners. Corbin Capucci's a beast. You know, you have Butch at middle linebacker, Taki at the end. Who's impressed you the most this season on that defense?
Sione Takitaki, right, Aaron? I mean, obviously he is the biggest standout on the defense.
I don't think there's any way you can say anybody other than him. And he sticks out a lot because he wasn't there last year, and BYU missed a pass rush. Now BYU didn't get any sacks in that game. I mean, against LSU, they only threw the ball 14 times. But Taki was in the backfield quickly, and he was disrupting plays. He had a few tackles for loss, even against, against Portland State. I think he had 7 tackles, 3 of them for loss and 2 sacks in his first game back after a year. So he's been the most impressive. We knew what we were going to get with Fred Warner. He's their best player. Butch Powell is the fuel general in defense. It's going to get the big hits. And then the corners are the best corners that I've seen at BYU in a while, just in their ability to defend and ability to not get beat, which BYU corners notoriously just get beat all the time, especially against the Utes. The Utes somehow know how to beat BYU corners better than everybody else. So the defense is solid, and I know the LSU game doesn't necessarily like speak volumes when you give up 479 yards, but it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. BYU was missing tackles, but I think Taki is really who sticks out for BYU from pass defense, you know, getting to the quarterback, and on the rushing defense and kind of getting in the backfield and plugging up holes and getting guys in the backfield.
Yeah, the number of yards that BYU gave up against LSU should not give Utah fans too much reason for excitement, because they were given so much time of possession. LSU had the ball the vast majority of the time because the offense could not move the ball and so many three and outs or close to it. So giving up 400 some odd yards never sounds good, but when your defense is on the field that much, you got to remember, out of all the trips to the red zone that LSU had, there were four that ended in either a field goal, a missed field goal, or a goal line stand. So this defense really, I think, really stepped it up, especially considering I kept expecting an injury with how much they were on the field and how much they were getting tired, obviously. So I think this defense is ready to go. I think that Sione Takitaki is just waiting to get a few more sacks. He is in the backfield almost every single play, disrupting whoever they're trying to block. So, and then when you cap it on the other end with 6'7" Corbin Kaufusi, who has really increased his technical abilities on the defensive end, it's really one of the best defensive lines BYU's had in a while. Now, are they going to get 3 or 4 sacks a game? You know, or even 1 or 2 sacks a game? No, but they're disrupting and they make it harder for the offense to do what they want to do. And then you add a solid linebacking core and probably the best top to bottom defensive back core that BYU's had in a while. This is one of the most top to bottom best BYU defenses they've had without having to be gimmicky and tricky the way Bronco Mendenhall's 3-4 defense was. They can just go out, set up a cover 2 or a man or something, and they can just execute it without having to do bunches of stunts and blitzes and keeping the offense guessing. They can just play straight up defense, and I, as a football fan, really enjoy that.
Absolutely. So if we start looking towards this coming weekend, rivalry week, how much from last year's game in Salt Lake can we carry over to this weekend in Provo, or nothing at all? I mean, obviously, both teams have lost their QBs. Taysom Hill onto the NFL. Troy Williams is currently the backup. The rushing attack is completely different for both teams. So can we take much away from last year, or, you know, is it just kind of a clean slate going into this week?
I don't think you can ever expect anything in the Holy War, right? I mean, like, BYU can be terrible and Utah can be having a great season and it's going to be a one-score game. It's just everything gets thrown out the window in this game. But I'm going to be honest, I'm really, really scared, not based on last year's game, but based on this year's performances. BYU's, they're looking like those years with Jake Heaps at the helm where they just could not move the ball, but they had a really good defense that kept them in the game. So I don't know. I haven't watched the down of Utah yet. I'll go ahead and admit that. But Utah always comes ready to play, and they always seem just to be a little bit more fired up to play BYU, even though they like to pretend like they don't care about BYU.
I had to throw that in there.
I agree, guys. Come on.
I think last year's game, it was such a fluke game from a perspective of what should happen, and that's just the proof of Holy War being different than any other game. I mean, BYU getting turnovers what felt like every other possession, but could not score points, and then they are able to, you know, they try to win it, and it was just a bad play call, you know, and in Salt Lake, and then they lose some really key personnel on offense, and even last year's offense was not good, you know, especially from a BYU perspective, it was not a good offense. Yeah, they had some good games, but the good games were almost the outliers. You know, they won the games they were supposed to win, and they lost some games that they probably should have won because the offense wasn't good.
If you look at the last two Holy Wars, right, you talk about BYU losing even though they caused 6 turnovers, and then the game before that in the Las Vegas Bowl, BYU giving up 35 straight points on 5 straight turnovers and turning around and making it a 1-score game in the end. I mean, you can't predict this kind of stuff. I mean, it's like football rules go out the window entirely. And like Aaron said, last year you got Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams, the number 1 and number 5 all-time rushing leaders at BYU, but still had a hard time moving the ball, you know, and it's just weird, man. The Holy War is weird, and I can't wait for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely, I love the Holy War. It's definitely, you know, those they're always close games outside of the rare, you know, 54-10 or the rare blowout by either team. But I'm excited for this year's Holy War. I think, you know, Utah's going to go in there. They're going to be fired up. Whittingham's going to have them fired up. I think Kalani's going to have these guys fired up. They're going to come in like wounded dogs. And I think it's going to be another battle again and an exciting game. And I think it's going to be a pretty good defensive battle. I'm intrigued to see offensively what BYU might do differently than they have the first two games. But I'm definitely intrigued to see what the Utes are going to come out if they open up the playbook again against Kalani's defense.
I tell you, I think the first team to make a play longer than 20 or 25 yards is probably going to win. Because I think both teams are going to say, look, we're going to keep everything in front of us and not let any home run balls. I think that Utah has the edge because they always seem to have that defensive line. They can just no blitz, four-man rush, and still get pressure on the quarterback. But if Tanner Mangum can kind of hone in that precision and get a couple downfield plays and get into scoring position, it's a totally different game. I think the flip side is also true, that if BYU can keep Utah's long plays to a minimum and really control the field position game, then that's the only way I think BYU is really going to have a chance in Provo.
Yeah, I think this is a gut check game for BYU, given they have two games under their belt, whereas Utah only has one. And both times that BYU's offense was completely inept, and you go up against a Utah defense that's always stout. I mean, Andy mentioned the defensive line. It's always a top-tier defensive line in the country. And it doesn't matter what anybody else they have because they always get pressure. And BYU's offense has got to find ways around that. Ty Detmer's got to scheme something up to get around that defensive line. And if this offense can't find a rhythm, can't get past the 50-yard line, it's going to be a long day for BYU because, as last year we saw, BYU can take the ball away a million times, but it doesn't matter if you can't move the ball on offense. And, you know, unlike Utah, BYU doesn't get pick sixes. For some reason, Utah can get a pick six all the time against BYU, whereas BYU gets an interception and only goes 5 yards. So they can't rely on the defense to score either. So it's gut check time for BYU to really see if this offense can turn a corner, and if not, if you don't turn a corner against Utah, where you should have more fire than any other game all year, especially after you just got your butts handed to you on a silver platter on national TV, you know, what is going to light a fire under you if this doesn't? It's going to be a huge gut check for BYU's offense and the team.
I agree, and it could be a spiral time, you know, and we'll talk about this tomorrow on our podcast too, but if BYU loses to Utah, especially if it's anywhere near as ugly as the game against LSU on Saturday, it could be a spiral to where the confidence just keeps on getting worse. And, you know, infighting in the team can happen when you get that kind of, you know, mentality. And then, of course, you're going to go up against Wisconsin that I think are going to do really similar things on defense to what LSU did. You know, and then you got a game against Utah State, but then you got to go against Boise State and Mississippi State. So it could be a long month or month and a half or so for BYU if they can't at least show up to play against Utah and be competitive.
Absolutely.
Right on.
Well, Patrick, how are we on time? We got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, I just definitely want to get everyone's predictions for the game, final scores, MVPs. So let's start off. Go ahead, one of the sports bros, either Andy or Aaron, whoever wants to start.
My prediction is going to be 20-10 Utah. I mean, I hate it, and like I feel like I need to like go take a shower after saying it, but at this point, and I didn't pick them. I picked Utah preseason even before I saw how terrible BYU was going to come out in the first two games. I think 20-10, like we were talking about earlier, low score battle, a couple of big plays by Utah, maybe a pick six or a punt return for a touchdown or something, gives them the spark that they need to make it a two score game late.
You know, I have a hard time putting a score on this yet, and I'm probably going to reveal it on our podcast because I haven't had enough time to really internalize things or watch film on Utah. I'm a little I'm on the fence on how I feel. Am I optimistic about BYU getting a fire lit under them, or am I, you know, just kind of ready to throw the season in the bag after two games? So I think it's hard to predict the score on this. Like, BYU should perform better, because you can't perform worse, you know, than what they've done through two games. You know, Portland State, they didn't look good. 20-6 against Portland State, as Utah knows, against Southern Utah last year, opened up and it was really lackluster. But then to have come out against LSU like that, you know, I do love Kalani's fire and basically calling out the offense. Not basically, he called them out. He just said, we need to fix this. We need to get this turned around. Our running backs aren't performing. This is embarrassing. So I don't have a prediction for you. All I know is I don't think it's going to be a two-score game, because it just never is. I think BYU finds a way to keep it close, whether that be in field goals, in turnovers, or whatever. But you know, Utah always comes with fire. Utah always – they're just good. They're just a good program right now. Whittingham has them as a very good program. Like Andy said, my blood is blue, but you can't deny that the red up north is just a good program, and they always have BYU – circled on their calendar, and they're ready to play. So it's going to be a battle for sure.
What about you, Andy? What's your take on the game?
Yeah, I mean, other Andy. Yep, sorry.
Oh,
you're sorry.
Good, Andy. For me, you know, I mean, I'm going to go along the lines of a 24-10. I don't see Utah's defense giving up a whole lot of points to BYU, seeing what we've seen from them these past couple of games. You know, and I don't know how our offense, you know, I don't think our offense is going to put up a ton of points against BYU's tough defense. But 24-10, and I'll probably say Zach Moss is my MVP.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say 27-13 for the Utes. You know, I definitely think BYU is going to come in and play a lot better, especially on their home turf. I know Kalani will have them fired up. Whittingham will have his team fired up. I expect a hard-fought game between both teams. Another great holy war. But I'm going to go 27-13 Utes. I'm excited for this rivalry week. I hate thinking that we have a chance to lose BYU, but I just don't see it happening this year. I think Ben is definitely going to happen for the Utes, especially with the way BYU's been playing. But again, they could come in as kind of a wounded dog and, you know, play that and have that spoiler mentality. But I definitely think the Utes are going to come away out of Provo victorious. We appreciate you guys taking time out of your night to come on our podcast. Why don't you guys go ahead and plug your Twitter handle and plug your podcast? And
yeah, like this show, we are also on Torn by Sports, the Torn by Sports family of podcasts and blogs. So go ahead, Torn by Sports is where you can find all our stuff. Our online Twitter is at Sports Bros. You can download us on iTunes or Stitcher, really anywhere you get your podcast. So we will be covering the Holy War tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. So tune in there, tornbysports.com or blogtalkradio.com, or you can find the link. We'll be posting it on Twitter tomorrow at SportsBuzz.
Well, we appreciate you both coming on, fellas.
Thank you so much, guys.
I'm glad we could keep it cordial and not have too much trash talk, but we'll look forward to the game.
We'll save that for Twitter. Yeah.
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 All right,
so we appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much
for coming
on.
Have a good night. You got it.
Night.
See ya.
All right. Well, we appreciate the Sports Bros coming on to our podcast to talk a little bit of BYU, give their insight with their connections to the program. But do you have anything else for the U fans, Andy, before we go?
No, I mean – It was great to have those guys on, and thank you again to Aaron and Andy from the Sports Bros. You know, nice little insight on kind of their vibes and feeling of the offense, the defense, individual players, things that, you know, we Ute fans don't see necessarily in our rival team. So great information from them, you know, and great insight. So, you know, it's Holy Week or Holy War Week. you know, try and keep things civil, fans. But I mean, I find it hard to believe that BYU is going to beat Utah. I just don't see it. I mean, how rough they've been playing these first two games. And I feel like Utah's only going to improve from North Dakota. So it makes me excited for this weekend. I wish I had tickets to the game, but then part of me is like, I just don't want to be there and deal with those fans.
Yeah, even though a lot of people downplay this rivalry, you know, it's definitely a game that's circled on the Utes' calendars. Whittingham doesn't want to lose this game. You know, the Utes definitely don't want to lose this game. It's an important game for all. You know, BYU is always a tough opponent. It's always a close game outside of, you know, those few, you know, blowouts here and there that they have. You know, I hope the Utes can do another 54-10. You know, I'm thinking it's going to be a fairly low-scoring game. But I definitely think the Utes are going to come out with a victory. But
for sure,
you know, the game is plug the game again. It's Saturday, September 9th, 8:15 p.m. In Provo, Edwards Stadium, on ESPN2. If you're not going to the game, just appreciate taking time out, Andy, and appreciate the Sports Bros taking time out as well. And we'll look forward to speaking to you all next Monday.
Of course, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. And definitely give us a follow and retweet us at UTalk Podcast. You know, we're here for you guys, so participate for our questions and, you know, whatnot. Let's make this the greatest podcast for Ute sports.
All right. Well, appreciate it, Andy. Go Ute.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.